The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
We welcome you back. The final hour has arrived on MLK Day, and we had planned on spending more time on that, and we did spend some in the third hour, but the story of this day came like a bomb explosion from Knoxville 3 hours ago. Tarrant, Tennessee, no parting of the ways, no resignation, fired Jeremy Pruitt after an internal investigation. The chancellor of the university, Chancellor Plowman, earlier today.
The personnel actions we are announcing today are an indication of the gravity of what we have discovered. Today, Athletic Director Fulmer and I issued termination letters to the following: assistant football coaches Brian Niedermeyer and Shelton Felton. Also, four members of our on-campus football recruiting staff. Additionally, our director and assistant director of football player personnel, and finally, a football analyst quality control coach. So what our council has told us is that we're looking at level one and level two violations. I don't know yet exactly how many or exactly the specifics of it.
The chancellor earlier today, and we have the live coverage here, Blake Topmeyer has covered this story from the beginning, and he joins us early evening from Knoxville. Blake, good evening. Thanks for being with us. And before we get to the specifics, just describe what this day has been like in Knoxville.
Well, it's obviously the big news that we've been waiting for, Paul, for probably at least a month now. I mean, the question for at least the last week or more has been, is Jeremy Pruitt going to get outright fired for cause, or is he going to get fired with a settlement for a reduced buyout? I mean, it felt like inevitable that a coaching change was coming, and we got the answer today that Pruitt's being fired for cause. Tennessee does not intend to pay him 1 cent of his $12.6 million buyout. Also included in the for cause firings were assistants Brian Niedermeyer and Shelton Felton. In the termination letter to Jeremy Pruitt, Tennessee Chancellor Donde Plowman outlined six for-cause provisions of Jeremy Pruitt's contract that the university believes he violated. And, of course, all this stems to the ongoing investigation into sweeping recruiting violations that have occurred or are believed to have occurred within Tennessee's program during Pruitt's watch.
Blake, so many things to unpack. Let me start with what the chancellor said. She threw her own program under the bus, and I understand the tendency to pile on, but having covered many of these before, as you have, that was really unprecedented. Address that, if you don't mind.
Well, it's obvious that the chancellor is frustrated, beyond frustrated, with the amount of malfeasance that I think she sees within the football program. I mean, these I think it's fair to call these sweeping violations and what she believes are going to be major violations stemming from the football program. She mentioned that she was stunned by both the number of infractions and the number of people involved in the infractions. And so, you know, it doesn't leave Tennessee, I guess, in a great position to come out on the other side of this and say, you know, hey, NCAA, take it easy on us. There really wasn't that much bad going on here. You know, you've seen a lot of athletic departments kind of play that card with the NCAA, play hardball with the NCAA, and say that they weren't breaking rules. I think Tennessee is quite clearly taking the approach of admitting its mistakes up front here, firing the people that it believes are responsible for the mistakes, and then going forward, it is going to have to pivot and try to likely self-impose penalties and hope that that can fend off some of the harshest punishment from the NCAA. But it does leave it in a difficult scenario here as it goes forward, not only with the NCAA, but as it tries to hire an athletic director and as it tries to attract a football coach.
Let's get to the Philip Fulmer part of the equation. It was an awkward press conference, especially with some of his answers. How did you see the end for Philip Fulmer today?
Well, Paul, it wasn't quite as awkward as that press conference in 2017 when Fulmer was announced as AD, and it was a very celebratory mood in that press conference, even though he became AD because John Curry was fired amid a chaotic 2017 football search. So that mood in 2017 was bizarre. Today's mood was somber, which I think reflected the nature of the situation Tennessee is in. And, Philip Fulmer came onto this job making clear that his top priority was to get the football program back on track. Obviously, he failed to accomplish that goal, hired Jeremy Pruitt, gave Jeremy Pruitt a contract extension on the field, just one winning season in 3 years. That combined with this mess off the field, and it's clear that Fulmer did not achieve that objective of jumpstarting the football program that he holds dear. And I think it has to be a disappointing exit for Philip Fulmer, that both the chancellor and Fulmer have dubbed this as his decision to step aside. He will remain on the job until a replacement for him is found. Fulmer said his reasoning is that he wants the next Tennessee football coach to be here long term, and he thinks that it'll be easier and more appropriate for Tennessee to hire that coach with an athletic director that he believes will be here long term. And with his timeline for the job, that didn't fit, and so he's deciding to step aside.
Blake, let's talk about where Tennessee goes immediately, and you would think it's to get an athletic director on board. What do you know?
Yeah, that's going to be priority one for Tennessee, and the chancellor, and she noted that some people might feel like the football search should take precedence. She doesn't believe that's the right way to go about it, and so the AD search will come first. Obviously, with the need to fill the football position, you're not going to be able to take an AD search throughout the course of the spring, I wouldn't think. I think this is going to have to be an expedited search. Tennessee has hired a search firm to assist in that search, and it's likely going to at least take longer than the last AD search took, which was probably a matter of minutes when Philip Fulmer was anointed AD after John Curry's ouster. But I do think this is something that could be wrapped up in a matter of a couple weeks, and I think it almost has to be, because you can't really let this go too deep into the spring without hiring a football coach, or you could be left with a situation where you have to go into 2021 with an interim coach, Kevin Steele, on the job. And the chancellor made clear that that's not her intention to forego a coaching search. Her intention is that, they complete this AD search smartly and quickly, and then that new AD will conduct a football coaching search, and get a new coach in place for the 2021 season. Now, I'm sure Kevin Steele would like to be considered a candidate for that, and maybe he will be, but it's not the chancellor's intention for Steele to just remain on the job as an interim coach in 2021 throughout the season. And to do that, you obviously need to take care of this AD search pretty swiftly.
Yeah, Blake, understanding where we are in at this point in history, what do you think Tennessee is looking at in terms of the athletic director?
Well, we know when it comes to Tennessee that they do seem to priority people with UT ties. I mean, we saw that when Philip Fulmer was brought back as the AD. We saw that when, just a couple years ago, Philip Fulmer hired Kelly Harper as Lady Vols coach, said he was told that, he was restricted in that search only to consider people who played within that program. And so I certainly think at Tennessee it's a place where experience at this university helps your cause. And so if you're going to go in that direction, I mean, a couple names come to mind. John Gilbert, the athletics director at East Carolina, obviously had a lengthy stint in Tennessee's athletic department. And then you think about Mark Ingram, the UAB athletics director, who played at Tennessee. I mean, those are a couple names that come to mind off the top. But you do wonder, this time with the search involving a search firm, and the way that Fulmer's AD tenure here is ending, if Tennessee will maybe welcome candidates from all corners and not just limit this to a search with someone with ties to the university. There are some candidates, the two that I mentioned there that you could find with ties, but I'd be curious to see if Tennessee's committed to going in that direction or not. When I asked the chancellor today what her priorities are in finding the next athletic director. She did not mention experience working for UT. She did mention that a bonus would be someone who's sat in the AD chair before, someone who's made coaching hires as an athletic director before. And, you know, she didn't say that previous AD experience or being a sitting AD was an outright requirement, but it certainly seems like people who have AD experience or are on the job somewhere as an AD right now would come to the top of the list.
Blake, I've rarely have ever seen a coach buried by his own chancellor like we saw Jeremy Pruitt today. I understand he's hired Lightfoot Franklin out of Birmingham. They are well-versed in representing NCAA cases, especially schools. They've represented Auburn. They've represented many other people in the past. I know he hasn't said anything, but do we expect someone to speak for him at some point here in the near future?
You would think he might consider it, and you wonder what's going to come from this. You know, you wonder if this could possibly result in a lawsuit. Obviously, Tennessee opted to go in favor of a for-cause hiring rather than to try to negotiate a reduced buyout and keep the potential of this winding up as a lawsuit, you know, for some of that severance money. So we'll see where that goes. I mean, I think Tennessee is trying to position itself against the potential of Pruitt having good grounds to sue for damages that he's owed by kind of throwing the book out at him, you know, in this termination letter. I mean, this is, as you mentioned, Paul, it's a five-page long termination letter with some, you know, some pretty stiff language about its now former head football coach. And of course, you know, Jeremy Pruitt would have been owed $12.6 million in severance if he was fired due to his on-field performance. And Tennessee is saying this is not related to his on-field performance, which was bad enough. He was 16-19 through three seasons. But, you know, Tennessee's stance is that this is a for-cause firing related to Pruitt's conduct and what it believes will likely lead to a Level 1 or Level 2 violation by Jeremy Pruitt and multiple Level 1 or Level 2 violations committed by people whom Pruitt supervised.
Blake, we're 12 minutes into this conversation, and a lot of people are scratching their head going, how did we get to this point? Where did this information come from? Was there a whistleblower inside this program spilling the goods? Obviously, the chancellor and Mike Glazer and his firm bought into it. So can you help us understand how we got to Jeremy Pruitt's firing after a relatively short period of time?
Yeah, that's a good question, Paul, and I'm glad you brought that up because the timeline of this, the chancellor's office received a verbal tip that it found credible pertaining to allegations of violations within the football program, and that tip occurred on November 3rd. Alerting the general counsel and the general counsel opening an internal investigation at Tennessee. Tennessee did then retain Mike Glazer and the other fellow lawyers at that Kansas-based law firm 6 days later on November 19th. And so this investigation's been humming for 2 months now. The NCAA enforcement staff is now involved. The NCAA became involved in December. And, you know, this investigation is not over, Paul. I mean, this is you know, kind of a checkpoint, I guess, on where things stand with Pruitt. We can put an end on the Pruitt era. That's over. But the investigation is not. That is going to continue internally at UT. And then once UT and its outside counsel that is retained wraps up that investigation, then you still have the matter of the NCAA pursuing the case. And as we all know, those NCAA processes can take a long time to wrap up. I mean, oftentimes the rulings on the violations there do not occur during the year in which the investigation, you know, really unfolded in earnest. So we could be a ways from learning the NCAA's verdict on this. But in the meantime, I think the Glazer representation could recommend to Tennessee that it self-impose penalties on the front end, because as we know, sometimes that's the recommended course of action. It doesn't always work. Sometimes the NCAA can still hit you on the backside, but oftentimes they recommend, you know, self-imposing penalties on the front end in hopes that the NCAA will then go a little bit easier on you when it comes time for them to levy penalties when they've wrapped up their investigation.
Blake, let me go back to the chancellor, because I understand university hierarchy react to things different than those of us who swim in the athletic circles. And clearly she was showing a high level of anger and frustration, as President Boyd was. But how does this affect what's next? And that is the investigation and ultimately the case, because when you get charged by the NCAA, and there are other ways of doing it, I mean, normally you fight for X number of the claims. She did not help the cause, did she?
I don't think so. No. And it's going to be interesting going forward, because right now I think Chancellor Plowman is probably one of the most popular people in East Tennessee because she fired Jeremy Pruitt without handing him a cent of buyout money. And Jeremy Pruitt's approval ratings have been in the toilet for months now. And so right now, I think this is hailed as a good move by Tennessee fans in seeing their coach fired and open up a search here. But you're right, down the road is the other side of this coin in terms of, trying to keep these violations from becoming a crippling blow to the football program. And not only that, but being able to attract good coaching candidates while knowing that NCAA penalties are likely around the corner, if not self-imposed penalties ahead of that. So it is it's a fine needle to thread, no doubt. I think you see these NCAA cases playing out in one of two different ways. I mean, there's two approaches that universities decide to take, and they're starkly different. One is more of kind of fess up to the violations on the front end. And I will say that Tennessee is even taking this, I think, a little bit beyond what you normally see in that regard. And then the other sense is playing hardball and denying the allegations and telling the NCAA, if you think malfeasance occurred here, you go out and prove it. I mean, it's two very different ways of approach. And, we've seen that unfold across the country the last few years, and sometimes it works, I think, to acknowledge violations on the front end. Other times you can point to instances where the better stance in terms of avoiding penalties were to play the deny, deny, deny game and to say, yeah, if something wrong happened here, go ahead and prove it. But certainly, I think in Chancellor Plowman's situation, that was not something she wanted to be involved in. Her obvious preferred method of action was to make a change in the football program, outline how serious the situation is, and then, handle what may come next.
Blake, two more questions, and I have shattered the standard here because I've gone about 8 minutes past the break. But two questions quickly. Hugh Freeze has been the fan favorite. We know that. We talked about it. Is he hireable? And secondly, many have speculated Jeremy Pruitt could get scooped up by Nick Saban as a defensive coordinator if Pete Golden goes to Texas. What's the answer to those two questions?
Well, in part one, I mean, the Hugh Freeze situation, and I recall last time we talked about this, he was not one of the first few names that I mentioned as potential candidates if Tennessee replaced Jeremy Pruitt, and for exactly this reason. I think it's going to be very difficult for Tennessee to go out there today and take this hardline stance against misconduct in its program and then go out and pursue Hugh Freeze. I mean, those two things would not add up at all. And so I think what we heard today and what Tennessee has outlined in terms of the initial findings of this investigation and the likely NCAA level one and level two violations to follow, I think it makes it more and more unlikely that Hugh Freeze comes to the top of the pecking order for Tennessee. He'll remain the fan favorite in many circles, but I don't think he's going to be Chancellor Plowman's favorite for the job, I wouldn't think. And in terms of Pruitt, I think he could go back to being, whether it be at Alabama, whether it be somewhere else, he could go back to being a successful defensive coordinator. He proved at three stops. He was a qualified and successful coordinator. He was a failure as a CEO at Tennessee. And you saw that in the on-field performance, aside from this mess off the field. I mean, there were plenty of on-field failings that showed his shortcomings as a coach. But as a defensive coordinator, I think based on his ability alone, you know, he'd be one of the most coveted defensive coordinators in the country. Now, the piece of that is Tennessee has laid out here that it expects, you know, Pruitt to be found to have committed a level one or a level two violation. So it's just a matter of, you know, is his next employer going to be comfortable with that?
Okay, thank you enough, Blake. I know you got a lot to do. We appreciate your time. We will be in touch very soon. Blake Topmeyer, fantastic job. And we are coming right back. We will try to make up for some lost time here in a minute, but that was so compelling that we had to get it all in. Back with much more after this.
You are listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We welcome you back here on this Monday night. Bobby is up next in North Carolina. Hey, Bobby.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
We're doing great. Thank you.
It's actually Robbie.
Robbie, sorry about that.
Yeah, Paul, it's a pleasure to be on your show. I want to thank you so much for the interview with the Vietnam veteran. And
oh, thank you.
How you subtly enlighten us with your content.
Yeah, I'm glad you heard that. That's a call that we will never forget. I'm so glad you heard it.
I was raised in the South, so I, you know, had situations where, you know, I was raised that way too. So it's really great that there's how we can all change.
Yeah, I mean, in a world where we tend to think of everything as doom and gloom and negative, that was one of the more inspiring calls, maybe the most I've heard in a long time.
Well, thank you. I'm calling about Jeremy Pruitt. In Seth Emerson's book, Attack the Day,
right,
he chronicled how Jeremy Pruitt caused a divide and Mark Richt's staff in his last year at Georgia. The players openly talked about the coaches that he bought from Alabama and him and Mark Richt's existing coaches clashing and that being a dysfunctional situation. So I think many Georgia people had big concerns when he got that job at Tennessee, that somebody with the character to undermine Mark Richt was probably not somebody you wanted to lead your program.
Yeah, I have to tell you, Bobby, I heard all that at the time and talked to other people who disputed it. They said that Jeremy had really done, he was trying to salvage the program. But in the end, those critics were correct. Jeremy Pruitt was not cut out for this job, in spite of many of us wishing and hoping that he was.
Right, and I think a lot of Georgia people realized there needed to be change at Georgia. I just think that he was a bull in a china shop, like some people today have said. You just don't come in and do that to somebody of Mark Richt's caliber.
I agree. Bobby, when he fired Jimmy Brumbaugh this year, that should have been the first clue, because that was something that was an overreaction. But Jeremy had his temper was always a negative.
Right.
Yeah, it's okay when you work for Nick Saban. That your temper is not going to be a problem. But
absolutely. But with Mark Richt, you know, you could probably run roughshod over him if you were that type of person. And it's just, you know, that caused a lot of concern with Georgia people.
Well, they were right, and a lot of us were wrong, including myself. Bobby, well, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it. And we still have 30 minutes to go. I went so long on the conversation with Blake, but he was so good that I wanted to, for those who were joining the show late, to get a good idea of how we got to today. Anyway, we still have 30 minutes to go. The story is not going away, in case you have to leave us now. We have 30 minutes remaining. We will get back to your phone calls and recap some of the events of the day right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We welcome you back. And Kathy is up next in Louisiana here on this Monday night. Hey, Kathy.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing
great.
My
comment is in reference to the gentleman that called about racism in the college coaching arena.
Right.
And I grew up in South Louisiana in the 60s. So I know a little bit about that rabbit hole. I also know what a big business college football is, and I live and breathe it here in the SEC. If for 1 minute LSU or anyone else saw a black Nick Saban out there, they would be chomping at the bit to hire them. So I think that the term racism is used in the wrong aspect. I term racism as, you know, a violent hate crime, and I don't think the universities have that in mind. I think they want what's best for their colleges, and they want to win. And if that means a black Nick Saban, they're going to go for it. A few years back, Florida State advertised that they wanted to hire a black coach exclusively. They were not going to interview any white coaches, and that didn't work out so well for them. So I'm concerned about in the aspect that the gentleman used racism, because I think, you know, the colleges want what's best for the university and their fans, whether it be a black coach or a white coach. And I'll hang up and leave you to comment. Thank you
very much. Ty is up next in Pennsylvania. Hello, Ty.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
I am doing great.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
First of all, Jeremy Pruitt now has a lot in common with Lee Majors, former Tennessee player who became the fall guy. I do want to comment on Bill Roden, though.
Yes, please.
I read his $40 million slaves, which I think should be in high school libraries as a way to educate young men on the choices that they can make to bring about change. Now, being from Alabama, I do take offense to people who criticize Alabama and when it comes to athletes and where black coaches don't get hired, because as of right now, three of the 12 black head coaches in NCAA football have recent Alabama ties with Nick Saban, Mel Tucker,
you are correct.
Mike Locksley, and now Charles Huff.
Right.
And when it comes to players, I think they sometimes get unfairly criticized about where they want to play and where they go, because if you talk to any player recent players about Nick Saban. They have nothing but glowing things to say about him and his instruction that they get from him at the University of Alabama. And it's up to the parents to provide knowledge about what these young men can do and what they can receive. And, Paul, I want to do one more thing and commend you for a guest you had on last week. It was Stephen Smith. Now, I've seen him on the Internet. A lot of people take pot shots at him sometimes, but I could tell he loves Alabama football. He's kind of unorthodox. But I just want to commend you for giving him a platform because, just like a lot of other reporters, he has opinions too.
Thank you, Ty. Thank you very much. And I have grown to be a big fan of Stephen. A friend of mine recommended him, and we had him on, and we're all huge fans because he not only is knowledgeable, he has tremendous passion. We appreciate your call. Let's continue with more. And Jesse is in Tennessee. Jesse, good evening. Thank you.
Hi, good evening, Paul. Thank you for having me on the show. I'm a big fan. When it comes to Ball for Life, the recent happenings with Jerry Pruitt coming from the fan base, I don't speak for everybody, but I kind of agree with the chancellor where she was standing with it whenever she was doing her kind of breakdown about what happened, about the other staff members having the allegations against them, with, you know, against the violation, and Jerry Pruitt representing the staff. You know, he was responsible for their happenings, everything that was going on, and, of course, you know, part of the crew. And I totally agree with the decision. I didn't have a problem with his record. I do know that is, you know, controversial, you know, amongst other fans. But I do understand that 2020 was tough for everybody, not just, you know, just everybody, normal people, but for the sports world as well. I wouldn't expect to have a normal season out of football, much less any other sport. But, you know, if they had made that decision based off of the record of this year, I don't think I would have agreed with it quite as much. But since it was based off of the allegations of all the other violations that they were having with the staff, you know, I totally agree with him being separated from the university just based on him being the head honcho of everybody at
Well, Jesse, the universities are, you know, have an athletic department, but when the university itself is in the crosshairs, which in this case they are, they have to mitigate their damages the second they find out, and otherwise they get slammed with a lack of institutional control charge, which
Absolutely.
Really affects yeah. everyone at the university. That's why the chancellor was so not emotional, but fiery today. She may have overshot the runway a little bit in terms of Pruitt, but she really didn't care. She was letting everyone know, especially the NCAA, that
right.
she wanted this guy out of there immediately.
Yeah, 100%. And when it come down to, of course, the decision by Philip Fulmer to retire, you know, I think that he had mentioned it in the very beginning that this was not meant to be a long-term stint of his as the AD for Tennessee. I think that this was the most appropriate time for him to make that decision as well, just from the fan base standpoint, because he is a Ball for Life, and he wants to see the program thrive.
I must tell you, Jesse, I feel some pangs of sorrow for him. I do not believe he is culpable in any way, shape, or form. And it just seems to me, maybe it's the partisanship of being a fan of him, but it just was a tough way to go out. But it's not going to diminish his role in Tennessee history. But he was probably
Correct.
Smarter
Right.
to get out today than get caught up in, are we going to let you hire the next coach when you hired the last one, who turned out to be. It's amazing to say, when you consider Derek Dooley and Butch Jones and all these other coaches that Tennessee has had since Fulmer, that Jeremy Pruitt turned out to be the biggest and the worst.
Right. And, you know, when it come down to it, whenever he was initially hired on, and this has gone for Butch and Derek as well, but, you know, there's the big push at the very beginning that that's going to be fantastic. And, you know, of course, Jeremy Pruitt had that same big push from the fan base as well, like, hey, this is going great. You know, and considering that Phil had really vetted his options with this, I know there was some fallout before with Jerry Pruitt not being the first selection.
Right.
But, you know, I do know that, you know, I don't think Phil would have made this decision based off of, you know, just, oh, you know, Jerry was the only other option that we had.
Remember this, and in fairness to Philip Fulmer, the previous athletic director, who is getting a lot of praise today from some of the critics around the country, destroyed the coaching search. He made a mess out of it. And Philip Fulmer came in because he was fired, and he didn't have – Tennessee had already offered the job to seven people. Philip immediately identified three, and the three were Jeremy Pruitt, Mel Tucker, and Kevin Steele. He chose one. He may have chosen the wrong one, but he didn't have a lot to choose from.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.